Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only El Jefe Carter Augustine. Carter, how are you, man?
Doing great, Nate. Great weather. Great result this weekend. Great soccer happening.
It was a perfect night at Children's Mercy Park, like you said, from a weather standpoint, from a result standpoint. 4-1, Sporting KC win it over Minnesota United. It was every bit as convincing as that scoreline would indicate. Move Sporting Kansas City back to the top of the Western Conference standings and within 1 point of Atlanta United in the Supporter Shield race as well. What were your thoughts as Sporting KC bounced back from what was a disappointing draw against Columbus to get that 4-1 victory?
I thought it was impressive considering that I think the result is what a lot of people would have expected on paper looking from the outside in, and especially coming off that the way they played up in Minnesota where they just completely dominated the whole second half. And I think a lot of people would have looked at that second half and been like, okay, this team on paper should put away this Minnesota United side at home. But this is MLS, and it feels like every time we do that, that doesn't happen. So I was really impressed with just they came out from the start really urgent, really aggressive, and really put Minnesota on the back foot. The goal that Minnesota got was really just a blip. I think it was really one of their only forays forward the entire game. And so I also give them credit. I don't know about you, but being able to respond after, you know, after Minnesota hit them right back, you get the shallowy goal. It's a great goal. It's a great strike, and you're thinking, okay, off and running now. And for Minnesota to come right back and score, I think it showed again that this group has some resiliency about them.
And a couple of firsts in the game. This was the first time in club history that two Sporting Kansas City homegrown players scored in the same match. Of course, it started with Daniel Shalloway. He's a well-known entity by this point for Sporting KC fans. And then Juan Cousin, Juan Kamal, by the way, our guest on the show this time last week,
yep,
which I was quick to point out to him when I saw him after the game. Hey, you know, come on the show with us.
It's a bump.
You get good luck. And he scored. It was also the first regular season game in the Opta era that started in 2010. The two Sporting Kansas City substitutes scored in a game, and of course Juan Cousin being one of them, and the other one being Diego Rubio, who came on late in the game. But let's talk about the young guys, because yes, Daniel Shalloway's been around for a little bit now, but he's 21 years old and an academy product. Juan Cousin, at just 19 years old, making just his second appearance, had a whale of a game, completing 31 of 32 passes, and of course scoring the goal. And then Jalen Lindsay, playing a little bit out of position, had to come in at the left back to replace Seth Sinovic. What did you think particularly of those two players, Cousin and Lindsay?
Yeah. Well, Peter Vermees told us last week that it was a tough position to put Cousin in a 0-0 against Columbus. And I think this was a tough position, too, when Quaze goes out. And all of a sudden, he's looking at 75 minutes on the pitch. But he really threw himself about, didn't he? I thought he got up and down. There was a nice little part of the game where he was dueling with Darwin Quintero in midfield, and I mean, obviously Quintero, the best player on Minnesota's side and a really seasoned Colombian international, fantastic player, and Cousin just held his own, you know, not scared of the moment, not scared of the name on the back of the shirt, and I thought that spoke well. And then for me, the biggest thing that stood out for his performance is the goal, and not just because the reaction to hit that with his left foot on the volley, you know, like he did, fantastic. But all week, Vermees had been preaching about getting guys into the box. And for a young player to have that desire and also, you know, he listened to what his coach had been saying all week, and it paid off because he gets in the box. It's a nice deflection, and that's why you're in the box. And then he made it tell in the end, and it was a great finish as well.
Yeah, it took a little deflection. Yep. I couldn't tell in the original viewing of it if Gerso Fernandez was the one that redirected it in, but at the end it was a Minnesota United player. But you couldn't tell whether or not that thing was headed on frame, so you couldn't take the goal away from Cousin for sure. and you put it, and that's why you put those shots in there. That's why you take your chances, because those opportunities at some point are going to pay out, and they did for Kuzain in that instance. Now, I was reading an article earlier today, Carter, in 442 USA about Kuzain and whether or not he is an interesting answer to one of the American dilemmas. Now, look, there are no shortage of articles and theories about what's wrong with American soccer, and they're going to be recycled and rehashed as we are painfully reminded of our lack of a presence in the World Cup this year. But I do think this is independent of the team failing to make the World Cup, that one of the issues in American soccer for a long time has been the lack of appreciation for, excuse me, the quote-unquote unathletic specimen. The small, sleight of frame, but technically gifted player. There have been questions about whether or not Christian Pulisic would have been as appreciated in American soccer as he was when he went to Germany. I don't know if that's correct or not.
Yeah, that's not fair, because he got there on the back of U.S. soccer.
But. Yeah, but Kuzain being a 5'10", 160-pound player, you and I talked about it last week, that he looks small on the field, even by soccer standards. He doesn't have anything about him that screams athleticism. He's not big and strong and incredibly fast. He's incredibly skilled, and his soccer IQ is really high. Will we start to see more players like that? Will the United States start to do a better job of identifying the Juan Kuzains of the world and getting them through their systems the way Sporting Kansas City have?
I think so, and I think the article that you point out is an example of how that people are more aware of this now, and how, yeah, for years it was all about being bigger, faster, and stronger in U.S. soccer, for sure. I also think he's just the product of this generation being able to watch a lot more soccer. I think, honestly, that's nothing that U.S. soccer can do. It's just the popularity of the sport has grown so much that it's on channel. You can watch the Bundesliga, you can watch La Liga, you can watch pretty much everything you want to. And so you spoke about his soccer IQ, and I think that just comes from him watching soccer his entire life. And I don't know about you, but I think we're going to have a lot of kids that have been – soccer fans have been watching Champions League. Talking to him last week, what did he say his biggest goal is to play in the Champions League?
Yeah.
And so I don't know how many kids there would have been that said that 10 years ago, you know? And so I think there'll be the percentage of kids that know about Champions League now is much higher. So I think it's just natural progression for some of it. Identifying kids with touch, though, is a little harder, isn't it? So, you know, you hope this is a good sign, and that there'll be more of Kuzain's line are out there that U.S. soccer can unearth. But credit to him, too, because he's worked hard at his craft, and he seems like a really driven young man.
And not shy about one thing that stands out to me about Lindsay, Shallowy, Kuzain, not shy about their ambitions at all.
Yeah.
I mean, you listen to Daniel Shallowy, and there is a confidence there that almost borders on arrogance, and I say that in a complimentary way. Mm-hmm. The guy believes in himself as a striker. He thinks he belongs on the biggest stage. He doesn't think – he's just, oh shucks, happy to be here. And when Kuzain comes on and has played literally 3 minutes of MLS soccer, and you ask him what his goals are, and he says to play in the Champions League. And remember, we asked him to qualify. Do you mean CONCACAF? He said, no, I mean UEFA Champions League and World Cup. And you get the same sense from Jalen Lindsay as well. I do think that bodes well for all those guys. I think you bring up an interesting point. The collective soccer IQ of this country is increasing rapidly.
I think so.
I didn't know what the Champions League was when I was his age. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what that competition was. I had read maybe an article about David Beckham, you know, and saw that they, you know, Manchester United had won some trophies that I'd never heard of. Didn't watch any of the games, didn't have access to them, and that's all different. And I do think that it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about it until you said it, but you learn sports by watching them.
100%.
You really do. Like, we watch the NBA, and when you have former tremendous players like Mark Jackson or whoever telling you this is what's happening on the basketball court right now, you pick those things up as you watch, and your IQ goes up. And then when you get out on a court or on a field, you try to emulate those things.
100%. And, like, from my own experience, you know, my dad played football, and so I grew up watching football. You know, that's pretty much what I knew growing up. I played soccer because it was the earliest sport you could play. I loved it, so I kept playing it. But football, it came natural because I saw my guy Emmett Smith do a spin move. So then at practice the next day, I did a spin move. Mm-hmm. And
you know, I'm sure you look just like Emmitt Smith.
Just like him.
Yeah.
and sure, they're precocious talents that maybe invented the spin move, mm-hmm. and don't need to see another player do a spin move. But I wasn't one of those, and I think most people aren't like that. So for me, watching the spin move on TV, it became natural to just try it and then get good at it, just doing it on the field. Not being able to watch too much soccer growing up, people around here always ask me how much I watch the Wizards. Sorry, I didn't watch them very much because they weren't on TV where I'm from. I could watch MLS Cup pretty much, and that was just about it. And so I wouldn't know what a step over was, and I didn't know,
what a
Cruyff turn was. And even more so than just specific skill sets, you talk about soccer IQ, and that's
tactics,
and that's one of Kuzain's best attributes is he just keeps the ball ticking over, especially when he's in that six playing for SPR. His first touch is phenomenal, and the second one is almost always away from him and just keeping that attack ticking over. And you don't get that I certainly didn't get that without knowing more about soccer and learning more about it. And I think you get a lot of that from watching it.
It's a really interesting point. I asked Kerry Zavagnin this week at training why he is such a good passer, why his numbers are through the roof as a USL player, why he was 31 of 32 in this game. His opinion was that one of the things that Kuzain does great is find space. He finds space in the game, which means when he gets the ball, he's in a position where he can turn, pick his head up, and pick out passes. I thought that was a really interesting knack. So the work that's being done for him to complete those passes actually happens before he ever even receives the ball. So that's something to really watch for the next time you see Kuzain out on the field. And I'll add one more thing to this conversation as we talk about what it's going to take for the United States to continue to develop better players. We've talked a lot about the role that MLS plays in this. And there's a short-term effect in terms of the increased level of play in MLS that is keeping some American players on the bench. They're having a harder time getting into games. But I believe there's a trickle-down effect to that, which is a player at 19 years old like Juan Kuzain, who's, let's be honest, he's perfect for Sporting Kansas City's system. He might go into another system and not be asked to play that number six role that has a defined role in this organization. And they might not, his qualities might not show themselves on the field. He comes in the system and he is an understudy to a player the caliber of Elie, who thinks the game and sees the game. He told us he was roommates with Elie in preseason, and he's learned everything from him. I think that will raise the level of development of younger players. They're going to be mentored by better players, and they're going to have to push better players to get their way into lineups. And I think down the road that can only have a benefit for the American players that are coming up.
Yeah, I think so. And he told us specifically talking about how he learned from Elie, who's always checking over his left, checking over his right shoulder. And he said continuously just from watching this guy in practice and in games, that's something that someone in that position has to do. So I think he knew that already, but, just watching it over and over and ingrains it into his mind. And, I think, the academy system is going to take some guys away from college, and so they're playing with these high-level professionals. Like you said, the quality of the league growing, the ability for Kuzain to have been playing with guys like Elie for a couple years before he gets to a certain age, I think, that's going to help him every day in practice, just playing with a higher level of player.
Okay, the one negative to me that came out of the game, a couple more injuries. Johan Kwaze suffers a hamstring injury, and then Seth Sinovic as well. And we know that the players went through a really tough week of practice. They lost a couple of guys to injury through the course of the week as well. Brad Evans and Kyrie Shelton with thigh injuries. So going into tomorrow night's game against Real Salt Lake, here's the injury report for Sporting KC. Kyrie Shelton is listed as questionable. It's been reported, though, he's more likely to return this weekend against Portland than he is to play tomorrow night. And then out, Johan Kwaze, Brad Evans, Felipe Gutierrez, we know about, of course, Jimmy Madronda, and Seth Sinovic. So there are going to be a handful of injuries to deal with, let alone two big matches on the road coming up in a short period of time.
Yeah, it seems like it came at the worst possible moment, didn't it? This really congested week. But we were talking about how deep this squad was at the beginning of the year, and now it's time for them to show it. Might get to see some players that you may not have seen before these injuries. So looking forward to that aspect. Kind of tough to pick negative things from that game, though, wasn't it? Because you talked about the subs coming in, making impacts. You get a good showing from Diego Rubio coming back from injury. So he gets on their score sheet. Really good to see that. Lindsay, we didn't really talk about, but coming in at left back for his first performance as an MLS player. So that just positives all around, other than this injury bug. But I think something to keep in mind, right, Nate, because we've seen this team towards the end of seasons over the past couple of years kind of fade out. So we'll see how that progresses throughout this long, hot summer.
Now, the good news is the team has a weekend off after this gauntlet of games. After the game against Portland, they have next weekend off. So a chance to maybe rest and recuperate there. But it's a matter of what can they get through with these two games and what can they get out of these two games. Also point out, Diego Rubio suspended for this Open Cup game against RSL because of actions in the Cup final a year ago that were retroactively punished. So that's a bummer because he just gets off the mark, like you said, scores a goal and then has a chance to come in. You'd think, oh man, some confidence opportunity for Rubio with Shelton injured. He's not going to be available either.
Like the perfect game for him.
That's all right, though. We'll take a break. We'll see what happens with this game, and we'll preview this game with Brian Dunseth, the color commentator for Real Salt Lake, as the two teams will square off tomorrow night in the first round for MLS teams involved in the U.S. Open Cup on the Sporting Kansas City Show. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, on what is a busy week for Sporting KC. Tomorrow night, they've got their first U.S. Open Cup game of 2018 as they will take on Real Salt Lake in Rio Tinto Stadium in Sandy, Utah. And then, of course, on Saturday, back in MLS play at the Portland Timbers. To break down particularly this matchup against Real Salt Lake, we're going to visit with the color commentator for Real Salt Lake. You can also hear him on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. You can watch him on national television, former U.S. men's national team player, and many other things. Brian Dunseth joins us on the show. Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you doing?
Doing great. And, of course, I should also mention the man that taught us the secret of socks, inside out.
True.
Love it.
So tell us what's going on with Real Salt Lake. This team got off to a rough start this year, but they seem to have found their footing here of late. What's going right for the guys in Sandy, Utah right now?
Combination of players coming back from injury, 4 wins in the last 5 matches, and guys that were probably expected to be starters in the beginning of the season, missed their opportunities for one reason or another, didn't take them with both hands. Are starting to fire on all cylinders, in particular Danny Acosta and Sonny in the midfield. We've had a couple of surprises, in particular with Nick Beasler and Corey Baird, the rookie out of Stanford. Both have played massive roles in the past 2 months for the way that this group plays and attacks. And I think overall, it's getting away from a really tough stretch that you talked about. For RSL, it seemed like every game they were playing one of the top 3 teams in either the Eastern Conference or the Western Conference. And then they kind of found their stretch between, you know, home at D.C., away at Philadelphia, away at Seattle, home against Houston, and then home against Seattle. 4 out of 5 wins. And as we all know, when you can string together a couple of 3 points consecutively, next thing you know, you've jumped a tremendous amount up the Western Conference table.
Yeah, that's right, Danny. Like you said, it's so early in the season that you have a good week and all of a sudden things are looking on the other end. And I want to talk about that because just a couple weeks ago, there were some quotes that I think made some headlines around USA Soccer coming from Albert Rusnak. And he hasn't been a part of a couple of these wins in the past couple of weeks. Was that him angling for a new contract, a salary raise or a move perhaps? Or was there some truth behind his statements about there being some questions about management?
Yeah, listen, Albert is why you guys would love Albert, why I love Albert, is that he's incredibly honest and open. And he's probably as Dutch as you can possibly get for a Slovakian because he will straight up tell you what is on his mind. And he is brilliant in halftime and post-game interviews. I did not take anything that he said maliciously. All I heard in being an ex-pro and understanding the ins and outs of what we love about in the media, the players' union releasing the salaries, is we get a clear indication of what player values are and how teams see their own players in terms of value and what their pay scale looks like. So I guess for me, Albert is by far the best player in Real Salt Lake. He has been the most consistent player for Real Salt Lake. He has become the face of the organization, all due respect to Nick Armando and Kyle Beckerman. And I think in this whole process of maybe being offered a new deal and thinking about what his future looks like, we should also probably remind everyone that he went from a youth international to a full international, yep, playing alongside Napoli's Marek Hamsik at the full international level. He has very quietly been one of the best playmakers in Major League Soccer, but doesn't really get the national recognition because he plays for Real Salt Lake. Those in the Western Conference that have seen him can tell he's a good player. He's 22 years old, guys. He came through the Man City Academy. He won a Dutch Cup with Groningen in Holland. He's come to Real Salt Lake and taken a pretty big leap of faith, hoping that he wouldn't be punished at the full international level by his manager, and has done everything right. I think this summer is probably the summer where, you know, we heard Sparta Prague. That's embarrassing. $1.5 million isn't even close to what the valuation is on Albert Rusnak. I could see him going somewhere above what Jack Harrison went. I think he's in form right now. He's got a higher potential, and he's a full European international. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a legitimate offer at some point that hovers around the $6 million mark. But Albert would be fine. Yeah, he's pissed off at everyone above him, but I think more than anything, that's just recognizing how close he is to maybe taking that next step in his career.
Sure, that's really interesting. As you mentioned, such a fantastic player. Do you think the club then is preparing for maybe him leaving this summer, and maybe do these results without him portend well for RSL if he does leave?
Yeah, the good news for RSL is guys like Jefferson Savarino, the young Venezuelan international, Dimir Krylov, the Croatian who came from Union Berlin, who played in that number 10 position, mm-hmm, while they picked up those points while Albert was away. You can feel the position, but it becomes the player playing it drastically different than Albert. It's the same way Albert played the position after Javier Morales' time came to an end for Real Salt Lake. So are they preparing? I think they're always preparing, but I don't think they're, in Major League Soccer, you're never really preparing for players to leave for Europe. I think you're more preparing for the disasters, which are form or injury. But I think if the move was made, which I'm not saying it is, I've not been privy to any of that information. If there was an option for Albert to leave and the price was right, I think RSL in the short term would be okay with having Jefferson and Dimir Krylov play that position, but they would be very active in the summer transfer window. Craig Weibel has done a phenomenal job of building this roster in a way that it can be extremely nimble when it has to, and they've got money to spend, so... I think they're in a really, really good situation.
We're visiting with Brian Dunseth as we get ready for tomorrow night's clash in the U.S. Open Cup between Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake. Kickoffs at 9 o'clock Central Time in Sandy, Utah. You can watch the live stream on ussoccer.com. And, Dunny, you mentioned a couple of guys that have stepped in and contributed well for Real Salt Lake, and Corey Baird and Nick Beisler. I want to start with the second of those two names because – that's a familiar name around here. In fact, Matt Beisler told me this morning that if the two should be on the field tomorrow night, it would be the first time they've ever played against one another in an organized setting in their lives. They're 6 years apart in age, so they've never played against each other. I think Nick's story is an interesting one, Donnie, because he didn't just burst right onto the scene. He was a top five pick, but he spent 3 years at the USL level. He's obviously on a second organization now, but that patience has paid off as he's getting some significant minutes now with Real Salt Lake. What have you noticed from him, and what's he brought to the table for RSL?
Yeah, first off, Nick is a phenomenal human being. I've gotten to know him since he's been in the organization, starting with the Real Monarchs, and I think that kid is just a top-class human being, first and foremost. To see what he's gone through and kind of take the path less traveled, like you said, top five pick, goes to Portland. Caleb Porter never really gives him an opportunity, never appears for the Portland Timbers on the first team, and then decides to make a really difficult choice, guys. I mean, he not only leaves the organization in Portland, but he goes to a USL-connected side to Real Salt Lake, and very quietly, I think, accrued almost 100 games and became the captain of the team. He was the captain for Mike Pecky when Pecky had initially come to the club and started coaching the Real Monarchs before Jeff Cassar was fired, and then Mike took over Real Salt Lake. Mike signed him halfway through the year last year, kept him playing with the Monarchs, and this year, with all of the injuries, I mean, you're talking Brooks Lennon, sixth choice right back. We've gone through five left backs so far. Nick was the number six center back that was played alongside Justin Glad. And those three starts, I thought he was very, very good. He's a defensive midfielder by trade, but he is a kid that can play in multiple positions. Has very good technique like his brother. Is very proficient with both feet. Loves to ping a long ball. Good, tough tackling. He's not just a side-to-side ball winner. Like when he wins the ball, he's just passing out of pressure, going side-to-side. He actually gets his head up and looks to see if he can bypass multiple players, and is extremely composed. And when you watch him play, you're not overawed by his physicality, but then all of a sudden he turns on the jets and he can run with players. So he's done very, very well. And I think I was probably the most impressed with him and his partnership with Sonny against the Houston Dynamo, just knowing that the Dynamo were in such great form heading into last week, coming off the win against NYCFC at home. He and Sonny just bossed that midfield around and were probably two of the biggest reasons why Real Salt Lake was able to take 3 points against Houston.
Well, let me just go ahead and tell you that that phenomenal human being part runs in the family. Mr. and Mrs. Beasler have done as parents, they should write a book on it because they have great kids. And I'll throw Mike Beasler in there, who's a school teacher here in Kansas City as well. The middle brother might not be a soccer player, but he's a great guy as well, Dunny. I want to ask about the other guy, Corey Baird. He's scoring goals coming in here at 22 years old. You mentioned three-time national champion at Stanford. What's he brought to the table outside of the obvious goal scoring?
Yeah, guys, nobody thought he would have a chance to play the amount of minutes. I mean, it was going to be one thing for him to get on the field this season. It was going to be another thing for him to see some significant minutes. And that would probably be an indicator that a lot of things had gone sideways for this group, and that's exactly what happened. You guys probably know the Yurim Ovsisian situation.
Yep.
Turned down the rest of his money from Spartak Moscow, signed a three-year deal here in Salt Lake. For one reason or another, after the deal was done, he just didn't look the same player after he had a really good season on loan. Mike Pecky decided he didn't want him a part of the group, didn't take the buyout, and so Real Salt Lake just kind of walked away from him. They're still on the hook for his salary. In the meantime, they signed a guy named Alfredo Ortuño from Spain, really prolific goal scorer. He was on a lot of people's radars, including your club, Sporting Kansas City. And he just looks a shadow of what we expected to come in. I mean, this guy, body language is all types of wrong. So Luis Silva has been playing the point position, the number nine, but he plays it more as a 10. He's more of a connector. He's more of the ball on the ground, likes to combine and get in behind. Well, Corey Baird comes in preseason, and he starts as a number eight on the second team. Then they realize he's got a little bit of burst on him, so they say, why not, let's try him in a wide spot, which he played in college. Then with Bofo Salcedo not taking his chances coming off the bench, Corey started being the first sub for Joao Plata or Jefferson Savarino. And when Plata fell out of form and Pecky benched him, all of a sudden Corey Baird gets three starts as a wide left attacking player, and he's got three or four goals. So then later in games, they decided, well, let's just see what he can do with his speed up top, and all of a sudden Real Salt Lake was completely different. They finally had a guy that could stretch the field at the point of the attack. So Corey's brought a completely different dimension, another fantastic human being off the field. And the kid's quiet as a mouse, but then you watch him play, and he's really, really exciting. He's hit the crossbar four times. I think he's got four goals. I think he's got two assists. And he's probably generates, on average, about three or four clear-cut chances over the course of 90 minutes. So he'll get better with his finishing, but so far, another solid young academy product that joined Bofo, Daniel Costa, Brooks Lennon, and Justin Glad coming out of the academy.
Kind of along those lines, Dunny, and I think it relates to this midweek game coming up in MLS, the first Open Cup action for MLS teams. I want to ask about Rail Monarchs, and we were talking with some people from Minnesota, and specifically Mark Watson on the coaching staff said they don't have a USL set up, and it's really hurt them in terms of getting guys game time, and they've had a big injury bug this year, and they've not been able to really fill those positions. Obviously, Rail Monarchs doing so well at the top of the West again this year, like they finished last year. What have you seen from Rail Monarchs, and can we expect maybe some youngsters to be in and around the squad for the game this week?
Yeah, it'll be an interesting dynamic. Mark Briggs, Thompson Olave have done a phenomenal job with the Rail Monarchs. They picked up right where they left off last season. It is a very close-knit group with the first team. There is a lot of player sharing, meaning that guys like Danny Acosta, Aaron Herrera, Adam Henry, Marcelo Silva, Jose Hernandez, Luke Mulholland, who am I missing? David Horst, and there's a couple other players that have all gotten significant minutes throughout the recovery, the road to recovery from injury. So they've integrated first team players while still doing a phenomenal job. Guys, as you guys know, having a USL side attached to the club is incredibly important, especially having a coaching staff that sees the game the exact same way. You're not forcing players to go to another state, to another location, to play in a completely different system. And I remember, even for me, back in the day, in the late 90s, if Thomas Rongen in 1997 said I needed a game, all of a sudden I was playing left midfield for the Raleigh Flyers when I was playing for the New England Revolution, and I was starting as a center back. So it's incredibly vital. I think tomorrow you might see one or two Rail Monarchs players. The problem is the collective bargaining agreement that has been signed by the Players Association, that anyone that turns 25 years of age during the calendar year is not allowed to be pulled up for these games. So it's pretty frustrating for guys like Sebastian Velasquez, Chandler Hoffman. They don't have the opportunity to come up and play in these games, which I think would be phenomenal because they've been so important for the Rail Monarchs. But I think tomorrow you'll see a lot of the guys that are not in the first squad right now, that are not basically 1 through 13, because I think Mike Pecky wants to make sure that guys that have been chomping at the bit and looking for their opportunities get an opportunity, and either prove why they deserve to be playing more, or they will prove exactly why they are not seeing any significant minutes for Real Salt Lake.
Well, I think it actually makes for good intrigue in these early round USL games, because we'll get to see some young guys. We'll get to see some kids, like you said, that maybe don't get to play on a consistent basis but are knocking on the door. And obviously, one team's going to advance in this tournament and one team's going to be done. So should be a lot of fun. Dunny, thanks a lot for the time. We really appreciate it. Keep up the great work on Counterattack as well. I always enjoy listening to that show, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Guys, appreciate it. Anytime you need me.
All right, that is Brian Dunseth. As we get ready for Sporting Kansas City and Real Salt Lake, 9 o'clock again tomorrow night Central Time on ussoccer.com. That's the live stream. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll preview the next MLS game for Sporting Kansas City. They're going to get on that plane straight from Utah and go to Portland to get ready to take on the Timbers in what is a massive Western Conference matchup. We'll preview that game with Ross Smith with you when we come back on the Sporting Kansas City Show. Our thanks to Brian Dunseth for joining us on the Sporting Kansas City Show, previewing the next game for Sporting KC, which is tomorrow night again at 9 o'clock on MLSsoccer.com, where you can watch the stream of the U.S. Open Cup game between Sporting and Real Salt Lake. But now we're going to preview the next MLS game for Sporting KC, and this is a tasty one with two of the best teams in the West that are in really good form right now, as well as Sporting will go straight from Utah to Portland to take on the Timbers on Saturday night, 9:30 Central Time, a game you can listen to right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, and you can watch, of course, on Fox Sports Kansas City and the Fox Sports Go app. To break down this Portland Timbers team with us now is color commentator for the Timbers, a good buddy of ours, Ross Smith, who we get to hang out with usually in Tucson, Arizona as well during preseason when the Timbers and Sporting are down there. Ross, it's good to hear your voice again, man. How you doing?
Yeah, good to hear you guys. Thanks for having me on. Like you said, we got to have some time together down in Tucson and to wrap our heads around this season, so it's good to catch up.
Well, and it seems, you tell me, but it seems like times are quite different for the Timbers now with Giovanni Savarese as the head coach than they were in the preseason. When we commentated on that game, I think we split the broadcast between ourselves and you guys. That Timbers team at that time looked like they were looking for the identity of the head coach and trying to kind of figure out exactly how they all fit together. And boy, does it seem like they figured that out. Seven matches unbeaten and recently a six-game winning streak. What's been coming together for the Timbers here of late?
Yeah, it's neat when you say that, Nate. And with you guys being down there for preseason, you know, we chatted after the game to go for a beer and dissect it. And we were quite surprised with the Timbers. And there was almost a little bit of a worry feeling with the, I would call them the original Timbers, the Timbers that have been known to the fan base because of the way they performed in preseason. But then we saw two sides to the Timbers team, and it was the newbies coming in who were impressing. And if we look at that one game that we shared the broadcast booth, it was we were doing the first half, and the Timbers were performing so poorly. And then the second half, when you guys took over with yourself, Matt and Carter, all of a sudden now the newbies came onto the pitch, and they looked a different team. And that was the theme for preseason, is that the new guys coming in really impressed Giovanni Savarese, the new manager, whereas the original Timbers, the known Timbers, it was as though that they had to buy in still. They needed to learn what the manager was all about, and they had to come across and be willing to do what he wanted to do. And so the big difference now, what we're seeing is, I feel those two sides to the Timbers, the two categories, the known and the newbies, are meshing together, and now the known Timbers are buying in to what the manager wants to do. There's a system, there's an identity, and they're pulling together, and the newbies are showing themselves in regular season mode. Guys like Armenteros, Paredes, Polo before he went off to the World Cup. Those guys are stepping up, so it's not the original Timbers pulling the team through.
Ross, you talk about kind of the transformation throughout this year and how they're starting to buy in now. I'm curious, what are they buying into in comparison to the Timbers teams that we've seen under Caleb Porter in the past? What's different this year with Savarese at the helm?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you would have thought at first, Giovanni coming in, that what a job for him. He comes in and he's picking up the best team in the West last year. He's picking up known commodities like Valeri, Ridgewell, Chara, Addy. But actually, I think that worked against him more than anything else. And Patrick Vieira said earlier this year, he actually thought Giovanni had a tougher task than what he had coming in. Patrick Vieira, New York City FC, wasn't great success. And so he could really start from the bottom and work his way. And so when you talk about the buy-in, right away you talk about the voice that you're hearing. Do you like what the manager's saying? Are you into what he's saying? And then you get onto the training pitch, and what's the manager doing on the training pitch? What ideas is he putting into my mind? What position is he putting me in? Is he playing me slightly different than what the previous manager did? Whereas with the new guys coming in, everything's new to them anyways, and so they don't know what was going on before in the past. So with the new voice, with the new ideas, and you could say a slightly new format, slightly new at the start in preseason, but it's been completely different with the formation change. The 4-3-2-1 has brought Giovanni quite a bit of success when he went to that formation. For me, it was like putting the training wheels on and almost saying, right, let's reset. Let's go back to the start. The first two games haven't been great. Let's just make things as simple as possible and build from there. And they've done that. And even before they got their first win in Minnesota, they were starting to build towards it. Orlando City, they were playing great until the final 10 minutes, and then they just fell apart. And so them buying into the system, now that results, I think, ultimately always make the difference. And as soon as you start winning, everybody starts buying in a little bit more. And I just have a feeling now when Giovanni says, look, we're going to do this today, every single set of eyeballs in that changing room are believing in him and are buying in and are going out and doing their best to execute it. And I think the managers had to earn that from the original Timbers.
So you talk about that 4-3-2-1. I guess they're calling it Christmas tree, right? That's a colloquialism. Is that on the Timbers theme there? Is that playing on that? I'm not sure. But what are the strengths of this team in this Christmas tree?
Originally, it was protecting that back four. Mm-hmm. And I think when Ridgewell came back into the team, obviously, he took a knock in the first minute of LAFC, but it was protecting the back four a little bit more, and it was leaving them nice and compact going through the middle, and then allowing their fullbacks, then if teams were going to try and get at them, then the fullbacks had to have a good game dealing with trying to the overloads from oppositions. But protecting that the middle of the back four, and Ridgewell, when he came back into the team, it's the best that I've seen him in a Timbers kit. Just the way he was organizing his fitness levels as well. I haven't touched on that yet. I thought preseason was grueling for the Timbers, something new, double sessions, and even the travel, first five games away from Providence Park. They needed that bit of rest, and I get back to Ridgewell there. You could see when he came back in the team, he looked fresh, and he looked like a guy who had a point to prove. And he was in a formation that suited him. I think it suited Chara originally, coming back into the team, finding his feet again after his injury last year. And so it was securing things a little bit more, and it was pairing guys in the right positions that they could look after one another. Now, it almost LAFC, I felt like, was the first match where Giovanni said, let's take the training wheels off. Let's push it more into a 4-3-3. Let's push the guys next to Chara. Let's push them further up in the pitch. And that was Paredes and Polo. And that's when I thought attacking-wise, they were threatening for the entire match, LAFC. They always carried a threat going forward. And so originally to protect the team, but now that they all understand things a bit more, I think Giovanni, he came in with a reputation to be tactically flexible. He's showing that he's willing to adjust things because now he has the trust in the guys, and it goes the other way as well with the guys having trust with the manager.
I'm visiting with Ross Smith, color commentator for the Portland Timbers, as we get you ready for two big games coming up this weekend. Of course, Real Salt Lake on Wednesday, and then this game at the Portland Timbers back in MLS play on Saturday night. Ross, you mentioned Diego Chara. To me, I'm sitting on the outside here looking at it, but you mentioned him. The role that he plays, I think, is very underrated for this Timbers team. He's going to be out on Saturday because of yellow card accumulation, and I'm sure you've seen the number here. The Timbers haven't won a game since 2015 without Chara in the lineup. They're 0-11-6 if you include the postseason in those results. Look, that can't be the entire story. I don't think any one player can be that important to a team, but that is a stark number. How do the Timbers replace him in one game, and maybe how important is Chara in this new formation with Portland?
Yeah, it's an amazing stat, isn't it? Just the influence that Chara has. And I think when you hear that stat, people will nod their heads and they can understand why, because of what he does do. And just if you look back to the last match before the penalty, right before then, Emmanuel Boateng has tried to take Chara on the counterattack 1v1. And it was such an amazing race to see in person. And Boateng for a second had edged Chara, but then Chara, using his experience, he was able to gain with his recovery angle. He was able to gain that extra yard and got himself back. Anyways, that led to a goal kick, went up the other way, penalty. And all from what Diego Chara did. And so it's those little things all the time where he's that safety blanket for the team. How the Timbers move forward, I think it's not only what he gives you on the pitch, his presence, his personality, just his calming influence. Guys love him. He is the common thread where you have guys from all over the world coming in now, such as the story of every club in MLS. You need that common denominator, and Chara is that guy. Where the Spanish-speaking guys like him, the European guys coming in like him, the British guys love him, the American guys love him. Everybody looks to him and thinks, right, that is our guy that gets us ticking. And so to replace him, you know, it's obviously don't, but who comes in? There's a few options where you look at Lawrence Olam has played in that holding center midfield position before. There's also a player for who has been playing well for T2, Eric Williamson. Whether that's too big a step for him, we're starting to wonder who we're going to see tomorrow night in the U.S. Open Cup game against San Jose. Because Giovanni Savarese has shown, if you impress, whether it's T2 or if you impress imagining games like this, then you'll get your rewards. Lawrence Olam would be the most likely, you would think, because David Guzman's away with the World Cup, or whether Giovanni tries something different, and if it's Paredes in there with somebody else. Paredes has gained the trust from his manager, and Flores had the trust coming over from the Cosmos. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw those two guys holding on. I'm going all around the trees here without giving you a definite answer. That is Giovanni Savarese. He's going into the training on Friday. You're still not quite sure, whereas with Caleb Porter before, you could say, right, this is going to be the lineup. Giovanni Savarese has shown that he's willing to make tweaks, and if you don't do it in training the day before, he's shown, right, you're out. If you think you're just going to stroll through it today, you're out. The next guy's in, because I'm going to show that trust in the guys. And so those are the options, I think. But Giovanni Savarese, he can sweep, he can tinker.
Well, sounds like it's going to be a tough choice for him to replace such a midfield anchor. I want to talk about a player that I figure should play a part and maybe bring this full circle down to Tucson, where Samuel Armenteros came into that game against SKC down in Tucson, and I know the three of us were like, wow, okay, this guy's got something about him. Obviously, it's taken a little bit for him to force his way into the starting lineup, but he's done just that. You know, what type of player is he? Obviously, scored that wonder goal against Colorado Rapids. Do you expect him to maybe have won the job over Fernando Adi at this point?
Yeah, no, of course, and for what he's shown. And I chatted with Matt Lawrence on Counterattack on Sirius, and with him and Dunny, and I said, Matt, you know what? You guys, Sporting Kansas City guys, are one of the few who I think would have known about Samuel Armenteros. So I think it's a little bit of a surprise factor right now with Armenteros coming in. Not anymore after the goals that he has scored. The one against Colorado, his first one, was, for me, it's the best goal in MLS so far this year, given the level of difficulty. But I think he surprised a lot of people with it, because what he offers is he can hurt you from so many different parts of the pitch. He's got belief in him. He's technical. He's got decent enough of mobility. But ultimately, he's ruthless. He scored four goals in preseason. You put the guy around the net, you give him half a chance, he's going to be finishing. And it's interesting that Merritt Paulson was on Grant Wall's podcast about a month ago, and he talked about the need for more personality in this league, and he referenced Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Now, I'm not putting his fellow Swede, Samuel Armenteros, in that category, but this guy believes in himself, Armenteros. And so that's what separates it from me, Carter, is that Samuel Armenteros, his biggest fan is Samuel Armenteros, because the guy just believes in his ability so much. And after that Colorado game, our post game, it was taken up from his interview with Nat Borchers, where Nat asked him a couple of questions, and he has gone on for about 4 minutes. He controlled their post game. He controls the game when he's in there. He controls the narrative. And this guy right now, he's in form. Even the last game against the Galaxy, the runs that he was making were so different and so clever compared to any other Timbers striker that we've seen in the MLS era.
Well, Ross Smith's biggest fans in Kansas City are Carter Augustine and Nate Buchanan.
That's true.
So that's
I need a clipping of this.
Yeah.
That's great.
And we'll send it to your bosses, Ross. The check's in the mail. Thanks a lot for the time. We really appreciate it. Take good care of Carter out in Portland, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Guys, as always, great to chat with you. Thanks for having me on.
All right, that is Ross Smith, color commentator for the Portland Timbers. Big game coming up.
Big one.
In the Western Conference. Two
fun
really
one.
Hot teams. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's always a good game between Sporting Kansas City. There have been some really memorable moments the last couple of years between Sporting and the Portland Timbers. We'll take a break, come back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting KC Show right after this. All right, back to wrap things up on another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our thanks to Brian Dunseth and Ross Smith. Great breakdowns from those two. Carter, it's going to be a big week for Sporting Kansas City, and I think we're going to see a lot of young players, and the depth of this team is going to be questioned here over the next 4 days.
Depth will be tested, and looking forward to both these games, seeing if they can defend their U.S. Open Cup title, maybe see some players get some good looks in that one, and it's tough not to look past it, though, because this Portland game is really exciting. I think the two teams play differently. Portland on the counter, Sporting with the ball. And I'm just really looking forward to that one with Valeri Blanco and Armenteros on the counter. That's really dangerous. So I think it's going to be a doozy out in Portland this weekend.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I'll give a shameless plug as well. If you missed our conversation with Matt Beisler earlier this morning, go check out the podcast page at 810WHB.com, where he talked about how this team is openly talking supporter shield. That's the one trophy that this core group of players doesn't have yet. If they want to get it, I think these are the types of results that become vital. Going on the road against a tough opponent, can you get a point or maybe even more, could go a long way in deciding that race. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. We'll see you next time right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.